Hello, welcome everyone to a new conversation of the Altering Shifting Communing Series, a project hosted by Call for Curators. I'm Ilaria Conti. I am the curator of this series, which began a year ago approximately with the intent to create a space to communally discuss the multiple understandings and possibilities of curating. And for those of you who might be tuning in for the first time, I just want to say that as a series, it aims to create really a space for exchanges and conversations to focus on practices that foster diverse forms of knowledge, that exercise critical thinking, and also that place collaboration at the center by cultivating non-hierarchical and non-normative approaches to the notion of curating. And also, very importantly, through this series, we are trying to look at curating also as a system of power that can trigger change on the social, political, financial infrastructures that allow for curating itself to exist. So through this series, we want to address the responsibilities of curating and the importance of considering not just what we do, but how we do it. And as I always repeat, in this sense, the title of the series, Altering, Shifting, Communing, is also a statement of intent toward altering the terms of the conversation, shifting ground, and communing with each other. So today we will discuss the work of Casco Art Institute with Pina, its director, and its curator, Stacy. Hi, thank you so much to both of you for being here today.
Thanks for having us.
Of course, it's a great pleasure. I was telling to some friends and colleagues that when we started this series, your work and the work of Casco was really one of the main inspirations and points of density of meaning that we were looking at and thinking about. So I'm very happy that 1 year into it, we have you with us today. In terms of the structure of the conversation, again, we will talk for approximately the next 40 minutes. And for those who are watching, I encourage really to feel free to ask questions in the meantime through the comment section of Facebook and YouTube. And we will address them, the questions, during the Q&A at the end. So again, Stacy, Bina, thank you. Just to get started, I would like to ask you to introduce yourself in your own words and terms. And also the question I like to start this series always with is, how are you and how has this past year or past months been?
Stacy, you'd like to begin?
I can begin. Yeah, maybe I'll start with introducing myself and then explain how I'm doing. My name is Stacy Boucher. I've been a curator at Casco since 2017, but my relationship with Casco started in 2015 when I visited in the summer for what in my graduate program is called a mentorship. And I studied at the Center for Curatorial Studies. And in between your 2 years of study, you select an institution that you would like to do your mentorship at. And I selected Casco. And I'm happy that they selected me. So that was the beginning of the relationship. And originally I'm from Florida. I moved around quite a bit, but I definitely have, like, being a Southerner as part of my identity. And in general, my curatorial practice, but also maybe my life practice in general, I'm interested in relationships and the kinds of artworks or practices that are born from relationships or inspired by them. And I think that especially, wanting to do my mentorship at Casco in the first place and then getting to continue this long-term working relationship, I have always thought that Casco was the kind of art space that I could really actually work in, that it was in alignment with you know, theory and practice, and also my interest in reproductive labor and care work. And it's been quite an experience since then, which Bina and I can elaborate on in our talk. But maybe how I'm doing. I'm doing okay. Now that it's a year and a half, I mean, I do miss my family. I haven't been able to see them in Florida for the longest that it's been, actually, as of seeing them, almost 2 years. So I am feeling a little bit homesick, and also in the collective feelings of this experience and the grief that's associated with it. But it does allow for a lot of quiet and deep exploration on many levels. So I think I'm doing pretty good, all things considered.
Thanks. Thank you, Stacy. Subina?
Well, maybe I start with that I'm good. It's now I just realized that we both are not Dutch, Stacy. but we are one of six, which makes the team of Casco who do the daily works. And four of us actually based in Utrecht and grew up in the Netherlands. And three of us, which are overlapping from other countries, building long-term relationship with the Netherlands. So I came to Netherlands 2003 in autumn to take the curatorial program, take part in the curatorial program at the Appel. So Stacy, coming from this Bard College curatorial background, and me from the Appel, and has been director at Casco since 2008. I came to Casco with much love and affection for its program, where artists really closely involved, and then also community working closely with artists. Back to how I am. In light of also the pandemic, there are a lot of, it's like really, with mixed feelings. Like in a way, I think we were ready for this kind of moment as practitioners. I mean, we here mean also like Casco team, because we have been facing the world system in crisis. It shouldn't stay like this. So we always place, situate art in the effort for making social change. So however drastic it is, we were ready for this, and this could be, I mean, we partly perceive this as an opportunity, making change faster, making necessary change like really implemented. But at the same time, you have to face with vulnerability with yourself and your, life matter, which to the extent that you didn't experience before, death is very near or imminent, for instance. And also the formidability of status quo, resistance to change. So vulnerability in real sense. So like every day I'm trying to prove myself well and ready for diving into what I and we have been working on. Yeah, that's how I am, where I am.
Yeah, well said, Bina.
This is Stacy.
Affirmative. I'm from the U.S., so that's true.
Thank you both so very much. So then we were thinking about the fact that some of the people that are watching this might not know CASCO as an institution or not very well. And so we decided to somewhat take it from the beginning, just because it's interesting also, as we were saying before, to understand what the narrative is or how it has been changing and so on. And so just as I said, starting from the beginning, I wanted to ask you very simply, how was CASCO born, and also in response to which needs and urgencies the organization was created? I know that you were not working there at the time, but somewhat sort of, where do you see the root of the institution, no? Where you're working now, and how has it evolved, perhaps, also, since you have joined, respectively, no? CASCO,
since the beginning. I mean, maybe I can start with this, but Bina, elaborate as you want to. Because I, like Bina and I were also talking about this too, of just the scale of CASCO and the ability and opportunities for CASCO to respond to the times that it's in very direct ways, but also, also intuitively and able to, adapt. But CASCO started in 1990, by a group of artists, female artists. And I guess like we could also characterize CASCO well with the different name changes that happened over time that I think are also quite reflective of the different life cycles that CASCO was having. Mm-hmm. In the first place, being CASCO projects and more like the artist collective formalizing itself into an organization of presenting artist work. And then CASCO Office for Art, Design, and Theory. And finally, CASCO Art Institute working for the commons. And I think what I have been able to understand of CASCO's history is that each of these moments were responding to, the different sort of contemporary art movements, since the 90s, more community-based art practices, relational aesthetics, but then into the rise of internationalism and globalism of the early 2000s. And more as well, but maybe Bina, you can elaborate a little bit on these life cycles or so, or what do you think?
We actually still in touch with one of the founders and those who worked at CASCO in the early 90s. So they are active in the field. One became museum director, the other one now working as an independent curator, as a teacher. So there is definitely, I think, informality at CASCO, although it didn't start as an artist-run space. But as name says, there was, I think, certain awareness about the placing art in public space. So after 5 years of experimenting with the storefront space in Utrecht city center, it moves into this space were program structure in three parts. So one was project, then space use as a office and platform and reflexive space, while project public, real public moment taking place in public space. And then two other pillars were publishing with issues, and then third one, salon. So this gathering. So I say this like mid-90s became like really create matrix for what Casco is and how we do now. I don't know. I'm thinking how lengthy I would go about this her story and their story. Maybe to make it a bit more exciting, things got really messy. I came on board.
Okay.
maybe rightfully because it was 2008. Just before I came, Casco was very still like integral. It's like a team of two or three, so very light, agile, and commissioning, doing 5 or 6 projects per year. And then it started expanding because director then Emily Pethick also from London. So there are more like international collaboration. But as I came in, it was also when this financial crisis happened. So like there was this sense that we can't take for granted what has been there. Somehow condition has been shifting. so then I thought we should connect this more relational, community involving or participatory works with artists. We need to situate this more in the broad social movement, connecting with other organizations who are working on the same issue, but yet without artistic aspect. Project called Grand Domestic Revolution kind of born out of that interest. And like we start this order or rhythm of doing one project after another start breaking in. And there was this like long-term massive collective process start shaping the institution. But then Grand Domestic Revolution, like basic idea is social structure is much embedded in privateness and private space, and a change could begin here. So if we are envisioning more like communal, let's say a common base society. At the time, we didn't use this word, commons. Then this could be a site for change, which we can begin with. Then we starting on the housing situation. So that was exactly 2010-11 was when squatting has been illegalized. So like there were demonstrations up here and there, which you couldn't see before, protesting against it. The law passed. So a lot of like squatting community were evicted since then. And also the domestic workers and cleaners, mostly coming from former former colonies of the Netherlands and other part of the global south, hence often with no legal document to work and live, but they were recognized by union in the Netherlands, and they start also started collective action for demanding for recognition of their work as valuable and needed work in the Netherlands. Yeah, then we start involved in this like squatter scene and domestic workers movement and migrant movement. Do you hear me?
Yes, we lost you just for half a second, but luckily you're back.
So with this Grand Domestic Revolution, there was this kind of environment, messy relational growth. And what that, I think, helped us is this apartment that we rented. So we had this 50 square meters apartment close to our office. At the same time function as gallery, and the like life work also start then mingling relationship of staff and artists, other collaborators also start mingling, and that led us to to planning that we should move. We can't stay at the office at in an office place, but we need somewhere more like home, where we can cook and where we can and sleep and cultivate this relationship or this mode of relationality further. And outcome is where we are in the city center, in a bit like intimate courtyard, where we moved in 2014. But it's not apartment. So we couldn't find such a good place. But we instead moved to a former school building, which until like 18th century hosted a Catholic convent where nuns were living. This is...
I was thinking that Grand Domestic Revolution is like the like a foreshadowing to this more like this maturity that Costco maturity is that the word? I mean, like how we've grown, and it also makes me think about how recently we were fantasizing about like, oh, we need to just buy a house and land. That was like a recent fantasy. Mm-hmm. So our location now is. Yeah, it's not a place to sleep and, you know, live too extensively, but at the same time, it's a, I think, a really important place for us now, and also of what we're able to cultivate there, or, you know, what we're able to explore with the commons and deepening our understanding of the commons by really taking the place that we're in at the moment.
Yeah. Which in a way leads me to my next question, which is about the commons. So you said that a few years back in 2018, sort of the name of the institution, the organization broadened, no? Casco Art Institute working for the commons. So I wanted to ask you, since this notion is so central to the vision and the activities and the programs and the infrastructure of Casco, I wanted to ask you whether you could tell us more about how you are interpreting or thinking this notion of the commons, perhaps at this point in time, because I assume it's something that grows and expands and changes over time. But so far, and standing where you are right now, I guess, in time and space and in your process of research and experimentation, how are you thinking? How do you interpret the commons when thinking about working for the commons?
I mean, over the past few years, it's been a struggle to articulate it, or, you know, a part of our goal of working for the commons is in a way popularizing what it is, but the commons is like, that's just one word to describe certain like concepts and practices. There are many other words for it. But maybe I can have like a little definition or just a kind of simple way of how we define it, which I like wrote this out just to make sure that I don't ramble on. So, I mean, there's many ways, but like what we've also explored within the team and also the artists that we're working with, but, you know, the many other kinds of practitioners that we work with, it's an important conversation point of talking about it, because once we have more of a shared understanding, that's when the magic happens in a way, or that there's like the beauty and joy opens up for what we're able to do together. So maybe in short, to say that in a simple way, that the commons are our resources. And this can be like land, which is like the most tangible form of the commons. It could be knowledge. It's also relations. It can also be art. But it's these resources are cared for and maintained and shared amongst a group, but a group that specifically commits to those resources. So, I mean, an example could be like a neighborhood garden. It could also be something really specific, like a lesbian farming commune. Or it could also be even more specific, but hard to grasp for many, of just particular ecosystems that are vital to sustaining life, or in many ways, many life forms that are under threat of extraction or profit. And then, you know, these are usually regarded by land stewards or protectors. And we also know this more of many indigenous people, the ways in which they value land. But it can also be advocates. You can also think of different cases of particular ecosystems that, you know, in the same ways in which corporations can have a sort of personhood, that there's been more efforts and advocacy for particular ecosystems to have like personhood or protectors. But specifically, like the fruits of the commons are considered important to be cared for. So whatever is coming from that commons. So we can also see it as like a collection, a house, land, but it's not just about that. It's about how it's cared for and maintained, since there's like many ways that could be done, you know? So, but with the commons, it's challenging the systems of public and private, and, you know, is not the only ways that we can regard like how we live and organize and govern life. So it's the group, the commoners, that are caring for those resources are the ones that determine like the ways and forms of that care. And then the governing principles and code of conduct or conditions. So this is like a small explanation of the commons, but there are many more. And there's also many ways in which we're engaging with it, you know, directly from Costco and like within Costco and our ecosystem, our networks of people that we work with. I hope that was more or less like clear and bite-sized.
Maybe what I could add is working both with very narrowly defined concept of commons as operation attached to this common resource, and working with really like broad a notion of commons, almost meaningless, however situated in this private and public dichotomy that has been structuring the society over like since 300 or even 500 years ago, you could say. So when we take with this broad notion, like it is to undo, there is only like individual or individualistic way of living and working. You constantly create your like claim ownership and then put the boundary on and accumulate what you own on and on, and use or build a relationship with the public as authority to actually guard this property or ownership that claimed by individual interests. And yeah, so like the way city is shaped these days, and the way that we as an individual human being spend our life, if you firstly, it's all down to this private and public dichotomy. But then the joy of life we gather from that is not private and that is neither private and public. Joy is in this moment when you have a coffee with your colleague in company and start brainstorming or start sharing about the life burden that you are struggling with. So that's like commons within this private corporate structure as an instance. And then in the city, like how much we know, how much relationship we have actually with our neighbors. But when there is open relationship with your neighbor, there's so much, it's both a safety net, but at the same time, safety net, but it also enrich your life quality. I would include also nature here. That when you're, it's not just urban setting with cement and concrete blocks, but when you are sharing space with other like non-human agent, non-human being, also how your life gets alive. Yeah, so I'm going far with this notion of commons. But again, like let's come down to the narrow, specific, clear notion of commons, that is sharing resource together with care of each other.
Thanks to both of you. So then, stemming from this understanding or possible understandings, the question arises, which is how are you shaping the programs, the contents, but also the processes and the infrastructures of CASCO around this understanding of what commons is? And also if you have any example that you might want to share, either at the level of programming and content, but again, very much also of the processes and infrastructures, if you would like, just to understand how you are further grounding this work for the commons and not just on the commons, which I really like.
I was thinking, because I wanted to respond to Bina, maybe it could be a bridge, because thinking about like narrow concepts or definitions or like examples of the commons in practice, or maybe the kind of fleeting moments of where it's actually happening. I think that the Undercommons by Fred Moten and Stefano Harney is, of course, like that was a inspiring kind of text at a particular moment in time for Casco. I mean, and still, because, well, a few things, but it made me think about how, well, what they're talking about of the sort of learning and education and what they call study that happens like outside of the classroom within the university, like the institution. And so, yeah, maybe as like a short bridge, I think maybe we can talk about study lines as a part of the program, that when Casco Art Institute Working for the Commons had its inaugural, the name change, and also the institution changed a lot, the graphic identity, there's quite a shift. And one of those important shifts was implementing and making visible also something that's still really messy for us, but what we call study lines. I could keep going, but yeah, maybe Bina, if you want to share a little bit more.
I think my theme of today is the messiness. Funny, I'm talking something that I didn't really talk in public, but before we joined this, that Stacey and me talked about that is institutional strike. So after running the program on the commons, about the commons, I think that was also like when we were most rich in terms of budget, like funding outcomes. We had like several commissions and a few experimental like collective research groups. But after running this program on the commons, for Composing the Common between 2013 and through 2016, we came down to like, are we practicing the commons, and this institution actually enable this practice? And we like working in this constant contradiction. But there was also voice like, what's the wrong with contradiction? You just do your service that, providing certain knowledge about the commons. But I think this contradiction became unbearable. So the team was almost like breaking down. I think I was also about to leave. But like, so few of us decided to remain, but take up this task of change, transform the institution, with hope that institution could be a place where we can do common. At the time, we took sense of this business and the concern, this like anxiety that you could have as a worker and producer, which we could find also as a general social phenomenon as obstruction to commoning practice. And what's at the core in commoning practice then, we understood as a deep understanding. Later, almost simultaneously by reading the Undercommons, then we start calling that deep understanding study. So we were saying actually like for ourselves, but also for our public, we don't really allow this space for study or deep understanding. There is this mandate for production or project and or exhibition, and then that just runs one after another.
Mm-hmm.
So that's how we took study as really like the center in the process of transforming CASPO, not just about the commons, but for and of the commons. But then it became a monster, new monster. This is what Stacy actually can tell. So how study became monster and how it became center, but
Yeah, I mean, so as Bina said earlier, that in the past year during the pandemic, there's been a lot of changes for CASPO, but also there was a lot of changes happening around us that we have also been advocating for. So it, so there's a lot of different changes that are happening in the institution now, which maybe we can talk about in a bit. But first, like responding to what Bina was saying, that like from 2018 to, you know, I guess the end of 2019, let's say, we were like fully starting our new institutional structure that had very particular elements to it. And one of those like program features was to have a biennial exhibition program. And this was in a way to, speak to the, like allow the study lines to speak in a way, because the ways in which we had, I think maybe 7 or 8 study lines, 6 to 7 study lines, that were touching on all different sort of themes. So they were kind of addressing different domains. They were just about different things.
And Stacey, can you give us some examples for those who might not know what you're referring to?
Yeah, so, well, I mean, maybe we could even say like, they're like projects, you know, but we were calling them study lines to show also this different process that's happening, that's a collective one and is also in pursuit of this deep understanding. And for example, Site for Unlearning, the project with the Shifting CASPO team for a few years and the artist Annette Kraus. This was a CASPO project that became a study line because it's a process that's ongoing. And study lines for us were, I think how we started to organize them is that each one from the team kind of set up their own study line so that the program could sort of breathe in and out of these study lines. Another example is like Unmapping Eurasia that Bina initiated, which is exploring the kind of artistic and cultural imaginary of Eurasia. And for example, myself and Rizvana Bradley started Poetics of Living, which was looking at non-normative ways, like poetic and artistic ways of thinking about health, sexuality, communal life, and death, which maybe I could also respond a little bit of how like study panned out for me with that one. But so anyways, the program feature of having biennial exhibition program was to also try to share artistic presentations related to those study lines. But the struggle with that is that it was still stuck in the production cycle of like a new presentation, then it's over, a new presentation. And it's not actually able to demonstrate the ongoingness of the study. It's moments, like little glimmers, moments in time where you can see like maybe a more autonomous individual artist kind of commission. And then you can also see collective practice in action or with like non-artistic practitioners or kind of mix. I think that the struggle or the monster of that is that it wasn't able to effectively demonstrate the study. But now I feel like in this last period of the year that we're able to shift a bit where it's a bit more like walking the walk, and then it speaks. I mean, I can say, and as it also relates to my curatorial practice, poetics of living is like the start of something which actually inspired me in 2019 to start hospice work, to become a volunteer. You know, so that was like, yeah, poetics of living also inspired, it was like a step before that. And then that's a practice that then is feeding back into thinking about future artistic projects. So now, you know, for in the next couple of years, there will be one related more to end of life care. But for me, in a life practice way, and also the curatorial practice, was a way in which now study and study lines are doing something different for me. That's just like a little vignette. But I think like the monster is like less of a monster now because of other sort of changes at Costco.
Yeah, we are with a monster. Maybe monster is there. Mm-hmm. We know where and how to play with a monster. Actually, because Larry, you asked me about the like compromise, whether we are not making compromise in relation to changing culture policy and then fundings. But it's strange. I never thought certain strategy that we take as a compromise, but maybe it was a compromise. So we didn't want to do exhibition. Actually, like desire was like stop doing exhibition, but then we thought we are focusing this much on study lines and studying, then at least we should have something to give as a service, something that works in public level. And exhibition should work, and the regularity of exhibition also should work, but in the end, we were only learning that wasn't really a good move. Something that we learned from it. So we are living away from exhibition being main strategy.
Yeah.
But still, there was really, like, I think, beautiful outcome from this focus on study and study line. It's something that Stacy just also mentioned. I didn't know that hospice, work at hospice is coming from poetics of living. So one condition, like we were asking, what we can bring as a study line, and anything that you are interested in. I mean, like we should be careful it doesn't become another like intellectualism like subject for your PhD. So it has to be deeply connected to life matter. Also, there should be constituency. It's not your thing, but there is community who share this concern. So through this, I think there has been transformation in work and work relationship. So Stacy and me, yes, officially we are in work relationship and certain hierarchy by different factors. But before and after all of this, Stacy is practitioner in this and that thing. So one is like they are working at hospice and they are really invested in this matter of life in relation to different approach to dying. So that also enable us to really practice in ecosystem, an institution made up of ecosystem. So it's not made up of workers and the public that we need to give service, but it is a bunch of practitioners. But again, like, we shouldn't forget there is a limit in it's, I think, legitimate limit, circle of commoners can accommodate. There is always public, or there is other commons. So how do you communicate with these other commons that you want to part of and the public? That's, I think, we are finally getting equipped to know how to communicate, and that's what we are working on now, like reconciliation between commons and the public.
And Bina, and I think that this is also a really nice segue of thinking about assembly, because as part of the change, the one important program element was to organize our annual assembly. And this is a chance for many of the different members of our ecosystem. And this is also, I think, greatly inspired by Arts Collaboratory and the project mentioned before of Site for Unlearning with Annette Kraus, that assembly is the chance for everyone to be able to get together and convene, even though they're coming from separate places and of different concerns. But for us, assembly, now this year is our fourth one. But with assembly, there's always a task at hand. I mean, it features like program elements, as you would find maybe in a symposium or so, but there are many aspects to it that are quite participatory and really rely on active engagement. The program, the assembly itself, is informed by everyone that's being part of it. So there's always a task at hand and something to address together. And so I think that, like, especially from the institutional change of 2018 and where we're at now, this assembly is also in a really important case for how we are able to do this practice. Mm-hmm. Yeah. There's that's the end of my current thought. I've learned recently that it's good sometimes in these live stream settings where it's like you're talking and then, you know, then you say, okay, I'm finished speaking. So someone else. Anyways, but yeah, I could go on about assembly, but I just wanted to add, based on also what Bina was saying, that this is an important part of Costco.
Well, you mentioned Site for Unlearning among the study lines. And I had a question about this because I was reading about it, of course, online, and I noted down sort of the small definition that was there as a study line, and I'm reading: the questions and changes embodied knowledge and organizational patterns and habits from the perspective of the commons, taking art organizations as exemplary sites. And I was struck because, of course, it is in great resonance with Alt-Shift-Com as a conversation series. And so I wanted to ask you, just even briefly, but whether you could tell us a little bit more. And you mentioned that this study line, among others, of course, but also contributed to this transition and change of Casco that you've been referring to. So I wanted to ask you also how, not only what in a way, but as we said before, how has it contributed? Like, what it was, a trigger or a spark for what, in a way, in your opinion?
It was how it was triggered, or what it was triggering. What's your?
I think both, like how it has affected change, but but also what kind of change, what kind of process has it set in motion, and but of which kind also, no? Like, what's happening thanks to this?
Yeah, in a way, I already mentioned that, but without without saying that it was a part of the cycle of learning at organization with Aneta and the team. So this desire for institutional strike is something that we arrived with this program, the fear by site for unlearning at organization, but also arts collaboratory as well. So it's not there is just this project, and this project caused us to change. But as with the embodied knowledge, and I also see this consistent line that we have this critical, ongoing critical question or caution against knowledge, learning, and study, and how we can genuinely have meaningful life where we actually unlearning, because there are so much learning for learning shake. This private and public dichotomy in order to survive and fit in this structure. What did I say? Stacey, you like to? Is there anything that you can? Cleaning and cooking. That's why I think cleaning and cooking is really like fundamental to this. Cleaning, like emblem, symbol of the reproduction and maintenance and care of life and relation that keep sustain life on.
With Cypher Unlearning, there were these multiple exercises that Aneta and the team were doing. And yeah, I also think about this a lot with the exercise to unlearn, well, the busyness of the office team that makes it so that, you know, there are certain people that are always doing the cleaning and cooking. And so part of that exercise was to, each day when we were in the working in the office, now it's a bit of a different story, but each day, there would be this rotation of who's doing the cooking. And then after our weekly team meetings, that's when we would clean together. So we would also divide up the tasks and then be able to do it at the same time, most of the time. But I wonder how we will be able to revitalize these maybe in this current kind of time that we're living. But in any case, it's I think that, as Bina was saying, cleaning is really maybe the most material, like symbolic and material practice that is just so vital for thinking about either, like, you know, a house as a commons or the earth as a commons, like the micro and macro scale, and in general the types of labor and knowledge that are just, you know, is undervalued. So I think that this is something. There were many other exercises from Site for Unlearning, but these are the two that I think are the most long-standing. And then, you know, in the Unlearning Exercises publication that was also launched in 2018, you can learn more about those other exercises, which are also very equally important to the process. I mean, also thinking about like unlearning property and many other kinds of unlearning.
Mm-hmm. But Stacey, like cleaning-wise, you were like intensively working on cleaning archive. So, yeah. Like cleaning
Yeah, cleaning and caring for. This is this is a big interest of mine being at Costco because, yeah, I think it's the Costco Her Story and the regenerative process of Costco, the kind of like maturation, but like the growth, degrowth of Costco that is also really visible within Costco's like archive or collection or library. But so how we're doing it now, I mean, it's not only about making a bit more like clear and accessible the archive, but also demonstrating more how these are resources also, like quite practically, they're resources for us that we care for. So, I mean, within our library, there's also particular collections. There's the Grand Domestic Revolution Library within the library. There's like also a quite dynamic site for unlearning project archive filled with all sorts of bits and materials. So, and of course, there's so many publishing endeavors of Costco over the past 30 years. So yeah, right now, and also in this kind of, you know, 30-year moment, that has become, I think, an important element, because it's also to say like, this is valuable, that Costco is precious. And it's worth taking care of these things and also for the future.
Definitely. And
I'm like, yeah.
Well, I just wanted to show you because I guess that the conversation also triggers further, like the possibility to deepen further. And so I was looking at the questions that we received and I said I would wait for sort of the Q&A, but since we're about to run out of time, I have one last question. But before getting to that, which would be a little bit of a lateral shift, I just wanted to ask you this question that came in from Lina, which is very relevant to what you were saying. How do you conceive the relationship between production, including knowledge production, and work, care work, in relation to the common, to the commons, and then the question continues. And in the same vein, visibility and representation and invisibility of certain.
What an amazing question.
Right?
Yeah.
Right? I don't know if you have more, any of you would like to add more to what you just shared about cooking and cleaning and all of this, and, or more.
Well, gosh. I mean, just one, oh yeah.
No.
One like a short thing. I mean, just even thinking about how, reproduction makes production possible, you know, thinking about that. And I'm thinking, I think that question is really great. And also this visibility, invisibility part. And it's also a question I'm asking myself a lot too. And for me, it's sometimes a question of like naming or like what is understood and made visible to everyone involved, not everyone, but everyone involved, if what that means. So it's not really an answer, but I guess I'm kind of echoing the question of this like visibility or naming or not only deep understanding, but shared understanding. Do you have a thought, Bina, about that?
I was just thinking that how a great word would be that everything becomes less visible. But then paradoxically that we are working intensively on visibility, and we say there's also joy for joy in making what has been invisible visible. But maybe it's just it's more about time. So it takes time. A commons get mature to be ready to work with other commons and work toward the public. The thing is how much resilient this vulnerable commons is in order to endure this moment of not visible, not really like public, many of resource that is necessary for living, that include monetary resource, to like being public and visibility. So when we say like, I mean, there are like now, like ever more the care became such an issue. Not me as the subject of feminist movement, but it is like broad social or political. It's put on the mainstream agenda. Like how to do this? It cannot be solved with our public. Neither private. So it's actually the commons who can do care properly. Then you know what actually public should do, could do. These commons who have most capacity for care. It's my question. Question to government. Like museums and art institutions can do a lot of exhibition about care, about the care. But this is at the cost of actual caring among workers and artists, you know, like in their extended relationship.
Which I think in a way takes me to the question I had saved for last, because we discussed this notion or multiple understandings also of what resources are. And so Bina, you're now talking also about how exhibition making can take away from where things are needed the most, perhaps. And so this takes me to the question of funding and sustainability, which is something that we were discussing before the live stream. I wanted to ask you, it is something that I tend to ask a lot in this series, because the importance of how things are structured at the level of infrastructure, the question of sustainability, funding streams, like all of these things, I think have an incredible impact on curating. And oftentimes this is made invisible from the broader conversation, we talk a lot about content, but then we tend to forget the invisible infrastructure that makes possible, the presentation or even the existence of this content in the first place. So I wanted to ask you simply how you're thinking about the notion of sustainability or the sustainability of your work, of Casco's work, also through the lens of the commons. In this particular moment in time, Bina, you were saying you joined Casco in 2008, financial crisis, and now we've been traversing another crisis. So it is somewhat a cycle that, you know, extends itself or closes itself, or we don't know. But basically, you've been traversing, two crises by now. So I wanted to ask both of you how you're thinking about this sustainability and funding for the organization and your own work.
As we are writing, working on application, I'm just hesitant whether I would put question to the extreme. Like, if we lose this question, if we lose this funding, could we and shall we continue or not? Imagine actually. let me put it like this. I think we build up our strengths as an institution of commons. I mean, like, we won't be ever perfect, but we are far more common than 2016. We would be, I think, safe even if there's no institution that could hire us, because we are already practicing. We are deep in our individual collective practice, and there's a relationship that holds us. But then, at the same time, we have something genuinely to share with other commons and the public. So in order to do this well, we need this and that resource. Mm-hmm. What we need now is a long-term subsidy that we are asking for, which we can invest invest in communication better and making things public. If that doesn't work, to put it really practical, if money is less than what we ask for, then we should think of how to bring down the scale or number of projects that we are doing to invest in this communication and so we maintain and keep this connection with the public and mainstream institution. I think if we were in a position that we would just disappear from the public, then I think we didn't, we wouldn't have endured this during this process. Keep adjusting and rethinking like our work in relation to art and the commons and art and institution. That's my answer.
Yeah, I nothing to add for now.
Okay. Well, then I just want to thank you so very much for tonight. Our time is up already. It was very quick. But thank you for sharing so generously and openly. I really appreciate it. I see some comments that are coming from people who were watching this, that thank you also for this, for making it so good. So thank you.
Thank you, Ilaria, for having us.
Yeah.
And thanks to everyone that is tuning in and watching.
Yeah.
Can I make a little plug?
Of course.
Because Costco is going to have a new website at the mid-end of May. And we're really happy to share it. So those that are watching now or like watching in the future can have a look then and like stay updated with what we're doing, because we'll be able to share much more clearly how like dynamic and precious these projects are that we're part of and investing in. So, thanks.
Thank you. We look forward to seeing that going live. So thank you so very much to both of you again.
Yeah, and thanks, Mina.
Yes. I just want to remind those who are still watching that in case you have any follow-up questions or anything, we're always very happy. I say this all the time at the end of the talks. We are happy to act as a bridge. If you have questions or anything that you may want to share with Stacey and Bina. So I'm just going to show here again the email address that is open for everybody for feedback, thoughts, questions, and so on. And here also, we will publish the recording of this talk, and we will announce the next speaker, which are guests that will join us in May. So again, Bina, Stacey, thank you so very much. Have a good rest of your day, and thank you everybody for watching and being with us today.
Take care, and thanks a lot. Everyone who listened to and thank me.
Bye.
Okay, bye.